I have it from my research. Oh. 1 second. Blah, 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 blue, 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 blue. What does CBI mean? Because RBI, well, we'll get to what RBI is too. CBI is the Central Bureau of Investigation.
Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie, and we're here to talk about singing and dancing and Tollywood boys.
Tollywood boys who get sucked into the addicting world of doing illegal stuff.
And making money.
Like, making money.
I get it, man. Yeah, I was trying to think of like, okay, there's no singing. There is some dancing.
There's a dance number.
But I was like, banking. I don't know.
Banking, and they do a lot of, there's a lot of emphasis around driving. Banking, yeah. And driving.
Banking and driving. Yeah, a lot of car stuff.
They do go to Goa. Yeah, it doesn't have the same ring to it, though.
No.
We're talking about Lucky Bhaskar today.
Lucky Bhaskar.
Lucky Bhaskar. I really liked it. I was really into this.
I did too. It felt so watchable.
Yeah, and very watchable.
The entire way through and when it ended, I was just like, DQ was the absolute perfect casting choice for this character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he has like the right amount of like family man energy and charm, but also intelligence. Like, right. He was perfect.
He was perfect. You do just kind of trust him and you believe him as kind of that, like, that everyman, but there's also something else going on in there. So, you know, you don't always know what direction he might go in. Yeah. Mm. I wrote down that this is a well-written, well-told story with a solid structure, good acting all around, and a satisfying ending.
Like, yeah.
I like a happy ending. I like my hero to come out on top. So...
Me too. And I like that it felt like there were twists, but they weren't forced or artificial. They just kind of like, they didn't overuse the whole like, oh, we're here now, but let's rewind and you'll see that I really did this. Like, they used that like one or two times and it fit perfectly and it was executed well. Yeah, I think it was great. I also loved the fourth wall breaks.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Again, I think similarly, you know, they used some different, like, I think one of the words that Netflix uses to describe this movie is irreverent. And I think there's just enough irreverence where it's consistent throughout, but it's also not too much. You know, it's not like they did the, you know, revealing the information after the fact thing once, which would make it feel jarring, but they didn't do it too much, like you said.
Yeah.
And same thing with the fourth wall breaking.
Yeah. It doesn't feel campy. It's just, it was really well done.
Very well done. I did also make a note. I find I do this maybe more than I should. I find myself kind of comparing South Indian movies to Bollywood movies that are maybe similar. And I was thinking, I was like, this is what Race wanted to be.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and they were going more the drama and violence route. So, like, not entirely, but, like, they wanted to create this, like, everyman hero who's really just, like, smarter than all the other people around him. And they did not.
And, you know, I do think it's a little bit easier because I don't know about you, but some of the money stuff... I was just like, I don't know that I fully understand that, but I think that's just because I don't want to understand it. So.
Right, yeah.
Like, I'll just believe you.
Right.
You know, once we get into the stock market, I'm just like,
whatever.
Yeah, I'll just roll with what you're telling me. That's fine.
Totally.
And like, I think that Race could have done that as well because import-export is also intense. And like, there was some of import-export here and I was like, I don't need the details.
No.
But you've sufficiently convinced me that this man is highly intelligent.
Right.
Yeah. So I agree with that comparison and Lucky Bhaskar coming out on top there.
Yeah.
It was also interesting because in the beginning, I also felt myself comparing it to White Tiger, not in any sort of direct way, but in a similar, like, this is a look at, like, the economic system of India.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, you know, it's like, what does poverty look like for the vast majority of people? And it might not necessarily mean you don't have a roof over your head, but it might mean that you can't afford another t-shirt for your child. Mm-hmm. Or like you can't afford to buy, you know, that one meal out. Like,
yep.
Stuff like that I was like, oh, okay, are we going to lean more into this? And we didn't, and I think that's fine. That was not the point of the movie. But, like, it did make me think about it, and it was interesting to shed light on that in a more, like, lighthearted thriller.
Yeah, I agree. I was also thinking about White Tiger because I was thinking specifically about the critical response of people from lower castes in India saying, mm-hmm. like, this does not feel like a good representation of us. This feels like it's making us out to be, like, these violent, conniving people. And I was thinking, I was sort of wondering, like, I wonder what people would think of that, because I don't know what his character's caste is. I assume he's a higher caste than the character in White Tiger. But, like, just that depiction of, like, someone who is living in, like, middle-class poverty.
Right.
Which is such an interesting thing that I don't think existed that much earlier than this movie is happening, because, like, you know, 50 or 60 years ago, if you're a bank teller, you can live comfortably. And I'm just basing this on the U.S. I'm not as familiar with India's economic history. But, like, you can't really live comfortably now on the salaries and the positions that people did a few decades ago. And I agree with you. Like, if they had done more with that, it would have been a different movie. It would have been, like, more of a, like, social justice drama. So I don't think they needed to, but there's just enough there that it got me thinking.
It got me thinking as well because, yeah, there's a lot of people in the States as well who it's like, you do everything quote-unquote right.
Yep.
And you're by the book and you're, like, showing up every day and you're going above and beyond and you're still not making enough money to actually, like, live.
Right. Like, I would never call myself impoverished in any way or at any point in my life, but I relate very strongly to that sentiment of, like, I feel like I'm doing everything right and the system is fully stacked against me to be able to, like, grow wealth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So it's funny. It's like, I'm very content with this movie and what it did and how it ended. And also, it's like, can we tap the writers and the directors of this film and ask them to make a film? About that. And I will say also, as I was thinking about what to research, I started to get a little worried where I was like, is this what I'm going to research? Like, am I going to look at what, like, middle class poverty looks like in India? And I was like, okay, yeah, like, I'm interested, but also sad. It's not what I researched.
Okay. But I also was wondering, I was like, that would be a really interesting topic, but also probably a big and heavy one.
Yeah, and it's hard when it's like, that is around us so much in the States as well.
Right.
So.
Hits different.
But anyway.
Yeah. So, of course, Lucky Bhaskar stars Dulquer Salmaan, the one, the only, the fabulous DQ. And we've also got Meenakshi Chaudhary, who plays Sumati.
She was incredible.
She was great. I mean, she had a lot of, like, very emotional stuff to do, and she did it very well.
Yeah.
And then the movie was written and directed by Venki Adluri.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we get into the plot?
Let's talk about it, yeah.
Okay. The movie opens in March 1992 with a handsome, bespectacled, fluffy-haired man going for a jog. He had so much hair in this movie, and I loved it.
So much hair. It's, like, similar to Shah Rukh, you can recognize this man by his hair.
By his hair, yes. It's large. It's plentiful. This man welcomes us to Bombay, the money capital of India, and introduces himself to us as Bhaskar. Immediately after his introduction, Bhaskar gets rounded up by a CBI officer from the Central Bureau of Investigation. He's got a name. I'm just going to call him the CBI officer.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people have names in this movie, but we don't need to know
that. I didn't write them all down. So this man brings Bhaskar to the Magda Bank where Bhaskar works. The officer says that there are allegations against Bhaskar for misuse of bank funds. As the CBI officer walks away, Bhaskar looks into the camera and his face goes from concerned to mischievous. He gives us a smirk and wonders where he should begin. We flash back to August 1989. Bhaskar is a teller at the Magda Bank. I should have said he was a bank receptionist.
I did have that thought. I was like, oh man, poor Harleen. Is she having a hard time making ends meet too? And then I remembered she lives in that really fancy house with her grandmother.
With her grandma. So she's fine. Harleen's doing fine. But so Bhaskar, not doing so fine. He makes 6,000 rupees a month, but he is in debt for 36,000 rupees. Mm-hmm. He tells us that he has won Employee of the Year for the past 3 years, and the assistant regional manager at his bank is about to retire, and his regional manager has promised to recommend Bhaskar for the position. Mm-hmm. And this is a big deal, because it's not assistant to the regional manager.
I was going to make a joke about that. Exactly.
Yep.
With double the salary if he gets it.
Right. So, you know, his family is really... so to speak, banking on this promotion. We also learn about there's a car that the bank recently repossessed, and mm-hmm. Bhaskar is very, he's determined to someday own this car. He's got a best friend named Samba who works as a custodian at the bank, and he and Samba have a side business where they're essentially like helping people in the community navigate the paperwork that they need to do their business at the bank, which sounds great, except he takes a small cut. From whatever business they're doing.
To be fair, though, it's kind of like if he were paid better in a way that he could support his family, he might do that for free.
I'm sure he would. He's a very nice guy. Yeah. But he does also owe a lot of people in his community money.
Yeah.
And he's the only person in his family who's making money. He lives with his younger brother, younger sister, his father, who recently several years ago suffered a stroke and can no longer talk. And also his beloved wife, Sumati. And they have a young son, Kartik. Mm-hmm. But so because he's the only one bringing in money, money's very tight for his family. And Bhaskar also explains to us that Sumati's family didn't approve of their marriage. And we see him and Sumati and Kartik all getting snubbed at this, you know, the in-laws, their son's birthday party.
Yeah.
Like, to horrible. The point where they're not giving Kartik as much cake as the other kids.
Yeah, which I'm like, how horrible of a human being do you have to be to, like, take out your weird class stuff on a child?
On a child who's related to you. I don't understand. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. These people are evil.
yes.
And so, like, they leave this party in a huff, and they don't end up, like, getting fed, which they were expecting to get a free meal out of this party, which they don't get. So they have to go to this roadside restaurant that they all love and frequent, and Bhaskar buys them a dinner that he can barely afford, and Sumati mm-hmm. cries, and she's asking Bhaskar to get her a loan because she has this dream of starting her own, like, home foods business. Mm-hmm. And she says, you know, get this loan, I'll start making money, we'll have more to live off of, and then that'll teach my family a lesson. But Bhaskar, you know, he's got this other loan that he's got to pay off first, but, you know, who needs money when your husband or partner is as adorable and sweet as this man?
Yeah.
He loves her, she loves him, they love each other and Kartik, and despite the money issues, there's a lot of joy in their family life.
They're trying to make it work.
They're trying to make it work, and we get a little romantic montage, and it's nice. So, at Bhaskar's side business, a man named Anthony approaches Bhaskar and Samba looking for a loan for 2 lakhs. He's trying to buy 30 TVs that were recently imported from Malaysia, but his financier backed out, and he has a month to get the money to, like, be able to take possession of these goods. Mm-hmm. And he's offering them a cut. Like, if they get him a loan, he'll give them a cut of whatever the profits are from selling these TVs.
Because he has, like, no collateral.
Right. So Bhaskar's already turned down this guy at least once at this point. And Samba is like, no, we should get in on this so we can get the cut. We'll make money. So why don't you ask your brother-in-law for a loan? But Bhaskar's like, that's definitely not a viable option. Meanwhile, Bhaskar gets roughed up by a guy who he owes money to, one of the many guys that he owes something to. And this man takes Bhaskar's scooter and tells him that he can have it back when he pays back the money that he owes him.
Yeah, like while he's at the temple before work.
Yeah.
Like he went to pray before work. This guy like waited for him to come out and then like ripped his shirt, stole mm-hmm. his bike. I understand Bhaskar owes him money, but that sucks.
It's like putting someone in debtor's prison in a way of like, you've now taken away one of the means that he has to get the opportunity to make money to pay you back. So you're shooting yourself in the foot. But anyway, so Bhaskar can't afford a cab, so he runs across town to get to work. He arrives late, but just in time to hear them announcing that they've given someone else the assistant regional manager job.
Mm-hmm.
Samba has found out that the regional manager never actually recommended Bhaskar for the position, and he posits that this is because the man who they did promote is Bengali and from the same caste as the regional manager.
Yeah.
And so Bhaskar is really upset. Like, this was gonna, like, fix everything in his mind. And so he confronts the manager. Things get heated. The manager says that the other guy is just better than Bhaskar, and also that he knows about Bhaskar's side business, which is illegal. And he threatens to complain to the general manager, but Bhaskar literally gets down on his knees and begs him not to. And a bunch of people are watching, and they all, like, come to Bhaskar's defense, because everybody loves him, because he's a lovable guy, and they're all like, don't get mad, he was just upset, like, it's gonna be okay. But this is
awful to watch.
Yeah, it's so hard to watch. It's obviously humiliating for Bhaskar. But so he goes, he gathers himself in the bathroom. He looks great. I know it's not what this is about, but he does look great. I was noticing he's got, like, some white hairs in his mane, which I like. Anyway. But yes.
He always looks good.
He does always look good. It's hard. It's hard to not notice. But there was something about this moment in particular. And it's also, like, his performance. He's, like, clearly distraught. Oh, yeah. And then he just, like, gathers himself. He, like, goes back out as if nothing happened. After work that day, the man Anthony approaches Bhaskar and Samba, and Samba tells him to leave, but Bhaskar's like, nah, join us. Tell us more about what you've got going on here. He's now interested in going in on this electronic scheme with Anthony, and the music swells as Bhaskar pulls several stacks of rupees out of his bag and puts them in Anthony's hand.
Yep.
He demands 10% for himself and Samba, and tells Samba that he took the money from the bank, and because his family was counting on this promotion, he is going to come home a winner no matter what. And so Anthony is able to use this money to buy the TVs, and he explains the whole situation. He buys these electronics in bulk for cheap from other countries, and then they bypass the import taxes by labeling them as spare parts. And so Bhaskar goes home. Anthony and Samba go to, like, do the business. Bhaskar tells Sumati that he didn't get the promotion. And then he anxiously waits for Anthony and Samba to come back with the cash, imagining all of the things that might have gone wrong. But it works out.
It does work out. I really love that scene and that they took the time to film all of that because it's such a good way of showing and, like, conveying the emotion you would have of sitting there waiting, being like, so many horrible things could happen that will throw me in jail. Like, I'll end up in jail.
Yeah, and so much more effective than, like, I mean, this is a movie where, like, the narration and the breaking of the fourth wall is used a lot, and it's used very well, and this would have been a cheat that they could have taken advantage of, but no, they were like, we're gonna actually show you the things he's imagining.
Right, what this looks like.
It was great. It was very good storytelling. But yeah, so it all works out. Anthony hands Bhaskar 50,000 rupees and thanks him for trusting him. And it turns out that Bhaskar actually invited Anthony to come and talk to them. So he was, like, already committed to this before Anthony came to talk to them.
Well, again, it's like desperate people
will
do
desperate things.
Yes, yeah. And it looks different, you know? Yeah, like White Tiger, it might involve someone killing someone. But, like, here, it's like he literally had to make something work.
Yeah. It's almost like the powers of the world think it's in their best interest to keep people being that desperate and making these kinds of choices.
Yeah.
But again, that's another topic for another movie, specifically White Tiger.
Yes. Yeah. If you want to learn more about that, watch White Tiger.
Yeah. But so Bhaskar gets his scooter back, and then he stealthily returns the cash to the bank, and he explains this all to us. He's, like, taking the money one day and logging less for what's getting put in the vault, and then the next day putting it all back and logging more than what's actually supposed to be getting put in the vault. So he's got the whole system. He knows what's going on.
I mean, and it's very clever if you have a sure bet that you're going to be able to replace the money you took.
Right, and a sure bet that the vault manager is going to be late and leave early every day, which, you know.
Yeah.
I guess you can always rely on unreliable people to be unreliable, but sometimes you can't. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. This leads us into a montage to the Lucky Bhaskar theme song, which is a bop.
yeah.
And Bhaskar continues working with Anthony and makes enough money to pay off all of his debts and even has a little something extra for Sumati. Mm-hmm. It's also apparently necessary for him to party and drink in order to, like, build these connections.
That felt weird to me, though. I don't know. I was like, is it necessary? Like,
that was maybe a little bit forced.
Yeah, I think because they were really trying to show how he's changing.
Right.
But...
yeah, so that maybe that's like a small, you know, that could have been maybe developed a little bit better. But,
yeah,
you know, the movie tells us that Bhaskar, as he's started drinking more, Sumati is concerned. He's, like, coming home drunk. Sometimes he's not coming home at all. It's getting a little fishy. So she confronts him, and Bhaskar explains that he has started an import-export business, but he doesn't want the bank to know about it. And Sumati just assumes that this is all happening above board. And she's like, okay, yeah, like, it sounds like you got another loan from the bank and you're figuring stuff out. And Bhaskar doesn't correct her. And then he turns to us and says, hey, I didn't lie. I just didn't tell the truth. Which, classic liar excuse.
Right? I'm like, the second that you find yourself saying that, you need to have words with your partner.
You need to reassess your choices. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so his family ends up using some of the extra money that they've earned to throw a spectacular birthday party for Krish. For Kartik, sorry. I kept calling him Krish, and then my notes started correcting his name to Kathy, and I was like, none of that's correct.
Kartik.
For Kartik. And
it's little Krish.
Yeah, baby Krish. So at this party, Anthony tells Bhaskar and Samba that a shipment of cars has come in, and if Bhaskar can get 10 lakhs to buy these cars, they'll quadruple their profits and they can split it three ways. And Bhaskar is hesitant because this is a lot more money than what he's been taking out. And Anthony gives him 2 days to think about it. But after the party, Kartik is so grateful to his parents that, like, they've given him status that he didn't have before. And it's just, it's so tragic to hear him talk about the way he's been treated just as a kid from a less affluent family.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, so grateful that he's not being treated that way anymore. And Bhaskar's like, okay, I'm doing this. And he tells us that he's chosen to take this risk for his family.
I mean, that's the thing, is that, like, you might be able to live in a certain way, but then if you find out your child's being impacted in ways you couldn't even have imagined, of course you're going to do whatever you can.
It's so true. Yeah. Children, he's like an innocent party in all of this. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what I love about it, because it's like, this is like an entertaining, fun movie, but I think it's also something that a lot of people can relate to.
Absolutely. And the stakes are real.
Yeah.
And make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and are relatable. Like, yeah, it just, I do think that that's something that makes it even more compelling. But yeah, so Bhaskar's in on the plan. It gets a little bit dicey getting the 10 lakhs because the vault manager is around, which they weren't expecting him to be, but they make it work. They get the cash. They buy the cars. Everything's looking like it's going to work out, but then their buyer falls through. Anthony starts panicking, but Bhaskar's like, listen, we just need to find another buyer. Someone else is going to buy these cars and we'll be fine. So Anthony makes a few calls and he finds someone in Goa. So off they go to Goa. On the way, they get stopped at a police checkpoint, and Samba doesn't have his license, and so the police are starting to get a little suspicious about what's going on here. But we flash back and see that before they left, Bhaskar had the idea to recruit some men from the street to pose as government officials, you know, to make it seem more legit their travels. And he also hired a spicy, sexy lady named Mona to be a distraction.
Of course.
For these cops. And this is kind of the first time we get this, like, going back and seeing... well, I guess it's not the first time, but it's the first time we're seeing it with his sort of, like, cleverness in play. Like, he had these ideas to put this stuff in place. And this works. They make it to Goa, they sell the cars, and Bhaskar gives a chunk of the profits to the men and to Mona, saying that the work that they did was so important, like, if they hadn't been there, they would have gone to jail. They head back to Bombay, and Anthony gets dropped at the airport, and he is leaving for the U.S. to be with his son. He's setting aside his illegal practices to go and be with his son, but he tells Bhaskar that he is only ever a phone call away.
Yes.
Bhaskar has to go straight to work. He has just enough time to, like, stop by home and get some laundry to throw in on top of his suitcase that is still full of cash.
Yep.
And so he's at work with a suitcase full of cash. And when he arrives at the bank, there are cops there. There are investigators there.
Uh-oh.
And one of his colleagues says, yeah, there's been some kind of scam. I'm not really sure what's going on. We were trying to call you. And he's like, oh my God, I've been found out. He's panicking, but actually it's the regional manager who is in trouble. He was arranging loans and taking a 10% commission.
Can't do that.
Can't do that. So he gets loaded into a cop car and Bhaskar goes to his desk. He's still got the cash with him and everybody's on high alert. So he, you know, again, there's this panic of like, okay, I haven't been found out yet, but I got a suitcase full of cash here. It could happen very soon.
Yeah.
We see his general manager ask him to open the suitcase. And when he does, there's nothing in it but clothes. Because Bhaskar had already got everything sorted in a clever way. And so the correct amount of money gets deposited in the vault. Everybody is happy. And the general manager apologizes for being so paranoid.
That was very stressful for me.
Me too, yes.
Yeah.
But again, it was crafted very well with the storytelling. After this, Bhaskar tells Samba that he's had enough, and Samba wants to keep going, and so he quits his job at the bank and starts his own import-export business. Bhaskar, through all of his dealings, has earned 6 lakhs extra that he plans to divide equally among his family responsibilities, but then his brother gets into a top engineering college, and Bhaskar spends all of that money on his brother's school fees.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, just after this happens, the chairman of the bank announces they're promoting him, not to assistant regional manager, but to regional manager.
Yes. I was just thinking, going back to, like, you know, it's like as soon as you feel like you're on top of things and you actually have some savings, something comes up and you're like, okay, well, back where we started.
Back to the, okay. Yeah, back to square
one. Which again
one.
Is also just relevant in many ways.
Yes, but also feels highly relatable.
Yeah.
But yeah, as regional manager, his salary will be 20,000 rupees a month, more than 3 times what he was earning before. And they ask him if he wants anything else in the deal. And he asks for the car that he always wanted.
Might
and he gets
well.
It. And he goes home and he sweeps Sumati off her feet. But back in the present, i.e. 1992, Bhaskar tells us that the real story is only just beginning. The CBI officer asks him why he has 100 crore rupees in his bank account and how a regular bank manager ended up with that much money. Bhaskar just sips his tea and winks at us, not at the CBI officer.
Yes. Yeah.
So now it's December 1990. Bhaskar is assigned to one of their top clients at the bank, Harsha Mehra, a broker who is, as I understand it, this is where the bank stuff started to get a little confusing for me, but
yeah,
he's like a go-between for like bank-to-bank loans. So the Magda Bank is loaning money to another bank. This man is a go-between. He gets a commission. For some reason, it's more convenient than doing it directly from bank to bank.
Yes. So spoiler alert, I researched some stuff relating to this.
Okay.
And apparently banks had to go through a broker.
Oh, they had to, okay.
To do loans. They had to. It was like, it was a law.
Okay.
More on that later. But great. Yes, you're correct.
Okay. So Bhaskar meets with a man named Suraj who works for Harsha. And Suraj tries to bribe Bhaskar, but Bhaskar is not having any of it. And he tells them that they need to repay this loan in 2 weeks with interest.
Mm-hmm.
They pay the loan, but Bhaskar sneakily uses this as an opportunity to look at Harsha's account information. And he sees that Harsha is not depositing the money into the other bank's account. He's depositing it into his own business's account.
Yeah.
And so Bhaskar goes to the other bank where this money is supposed to be being deposited, and he sees immediately that everybody is on the take in some way. Everyone's got fancy watches and is just like, you know, they're in on this, he realizes.
Yep.
So he goes to Harsha's business, and he learns from one of the employees working there that Harsha is rigging stock shares. So he's buying up small numbers of shares from across people in his company, and he's doing that using the money from the Magda Bank. And then when those stock values spike, he sells them all en masse, making all of that money for a high rate of return. So Bhaskar considers reporting this illegal activity to the bank chairman, but then he decides, well, maybe I'll just get in on it instead. And so he meets with Suraj and he demands 1% of the value brought in from the bank transfers and 1 day's notice before buying and selling any of the stock shares. And Suraj agrees, and this is another great moment of Dulquer Salmaan's acting that I really liked, where he, like, there's a split second where he's, like, surprised with, like, his own idea and Suraj being in on it. And it's just such a good moment of, like, I did it. And then he's just like, oh, I gotta be cool. And it's very good. But so Bhaskar gets a contact for money laundering from Anthony. And this contact helps him to fake win the lottery. So this is how it's justified that suddenly he's got a lot of money. And he also buys an account from a very unreliable firm for buying and selling stocks. But he does successfully make even more money off of Harsha's share rigging by getting the tips to buy and sell into the stocks that Harsha is doing this with. He deposits the checks that he's earning, the humongous checks that he's earning, into his bank account, and he tells his coworker not to tell anyone or it will ruin his luck. And so this is finally where the lucky part of Lucky Bhaskar comes into play, because I'm like, so far he's not lucky, he's really smart, but it's pretending it's luck. So back in 1992, the CBI officer asks him about a day where Bhaskar withdrew a particularly large sum of money all at once. Bhaskar explains that he did what I can only describe as pretty womaning. This jewelry store. So he's there, they're like buying jewelry with his sister who's getting married, and the people are like not serving them. They're being rude to them. And so he goes and just like buys a fancy car and a bunch of fancy clothes and watches, and they go back like, I think the same day.
I think so, yeah.
To be like, now you're going to serve us and you're going to do it right.
Yeah.
Which is
great. And I also like that he kind of hate buys the entire counter.
Yeah.
Even like with the stuff that his wife and sister don't like. That's totally something I feel like I would do, where I'd be like, I'll show you. But then it's like, well, but you are also putting money in their pocket.
Right. Yeah. Ultimately, you're giving them business and you're losing out. But it's the spite of it all that's feels good, I guess. But he tells us that this is India. If you want to buy something, you have to have money. But if you want respect, that money has to be visible on your body. Things continue. Bhaskar's money launderer tells him that he needs to have a private limited company that they can move the money through. It's not working to do the lottery thing anymore. So Bhaskar fulfills Sumati's dream of opening a home food storefront. But of course, he insists that she know nothing about the fact that it is a front for money laundering.
Fair.
And she just accepts that she's getting these huge orders from like foreign parties. She's like, cool, great, I'm very popular. Which I don't hold that against her. She's like living her dream and very happy.
Well, and my one hope of this, which they didn't really explore in detail because it's fine, like why would they, but I do hope that because she was getting all these big foreign orders that it helped drum up local business for her as well. I like to think that she did have a huge client base, and it wasn't all her husband.
I agree. I think it's likely that she got to do some actual good business.
Yes, totally.
But so we get another montage where Bhaskar fixes up the house and he covers up for Harsha when he's not able to repay his loans on time. But he's also drinking a lot and he's being a jerk to people. The money has changed him and he's actively rude to Sumati, to the people in his community, to his coworkers. He even snaps at Kartik when Kartik complains about the food at a fancy restaurant, saying that it's not as good as the roadside eatery they used to go to. Sumati tells Bhaskar that he's being arrogant and prideful, but Bhaskar says he's being courageous and strong. He says that he's not a bad person, he's just rich, and she should show a little gratitude for how much his wealth has done for her. And rightfully, Sumati does not appreciate being spoken to like this, and they start to sleep separately.
Yep. I mean, good for her for laying down her boundaries and...
Yeah, absolutely. He's not being a very nice guy right now. And that was, like, pretty much his main draw for their entire relationship is you're handsome and you're very nice.
Right.
But so then Bhaskar learns that Harsha has been forging bank receipts and has been taking hundreds of crores of loans against non-existent funds, which, if exposed, could crash the whole money market and the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
When the general manager from the other bank that they were doing the fake transfers through finds out about this, he has a heart attack and dies.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a bummer.
And well, because I hate that they were like, if we expose this, then we'll go to prison for them being fake, which I was kind of like, that sucks. Why? Well, if you finally realize that the bank receipts you were getting are fake.
Right, but they were also both on the tape.
Well, they were also taking a cut. Yeah.
So,
if you weren't taking a cut, though, I'd be like, that would suck. If you're on the straight and narrow, and then you're like...
Yeah. I mean, I think if they weren't on the take, then they probably could have just reported him and...
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Again, I'm not really sure how all of this works, but that was my assumption. So Bhaskar tells Suraj that they need to stop. He wants out of all of this, but Suraj assures him that Harsha will take care of everything. And then we find out that Samba has, like, risked all of his money and lost all of his money, and also that Sumati's brother-in-law, or the brother-in-law who was rude to them before, needs money and is asking Bhaskar for money. And this sends Sumati into a rage because, as she points out, her family never helped them when they needed it.
Yeah. And in fact, actively, like, made things worse.
Yes. Yeah. We're actively cruel to them. And so, you know, she is refusing them help. And her mother tells Sumati that Sumati is making money off of her idea for a home foods business. Like, the mom is just like, well, that was my idea. Which is just stupid. And so Sumati goes and destroys the shop. And she tells Bhaskar that enough is enough. She tells him that he's changed and she wants their old life and the old Bhaskar back.
Yeah.
At home, Bhaskar's dad tells him they need to talk. And it's the first time he's said anything in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how you know you've made some poor choices.
Yeah, he came out of his stroke to give him a talking to. And his dad used to be a chartered accountant, and so he has figured out everything that Bhaskar is doing. And he tells Bhaskar that what maybe started as helping his family has turned into an addiction and now has led Bhaskar to completely forget about his family.
Yeah.
Sumati overhears this, and she realizes that her business was just a front for money laundering.
The betrayal? That would be awful.
Seriously, yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, so that's rough. They close the business. Bhaskar sells his stocks. He buys a house for his sister and her new family, and he puts Samba and his brother-in-law in business with one another. So he's making up to people. He's makes up with his coworkers. He makes up with Sumati. it's Kalki all over again. He makes up with Sumati, and then, you know, he's going clean and he's bringing everyone else with him. But there's still this issue of Harsha not being able to repay these loans on time, and Bhaskar's general manager is telling him, like, go easy on them, you know, the other bank just lost their general manager, like, you know, it doesn't matter that they're not repaying things on time. But Bhaskar refuses to issue any more bank receipts, and the general manager says that that's disrespectful, so Bhaskar resigns.
Yeah.
He's just out of there, and everybody is confused and shocked that he's resigning. One of his coworkers
resigns.
Yes, very public. One of his coworkers tells him that there is an inspection that's about to happen at the bank, but Bhaskar says that that's not his problem anymore. And so this brings us to, again, the quote-unquote present day of 1992. The CBI officer says that they don't have anything on Bhaskar, but they also can't let him go. And he threatens Bhaskar and his family with ruin and offers Bhaskar a deal. Write a check to Harsha for 100 crore, emptying his bank account, and then Harsha will give that money to the bank, and everything will be squeaky clean for when the inspectors come. And so this guy is not the inspection that was threatened. This guy is some sketchy, dirty guy.
He's just on the take.
He's on the take, just like everybody.
Everyone's
in this
movie. On the take. Yeah.
So the bank chairman speaks to Bhaskar privately and reveals that Bhaskar was meant to be a scapegoat all along. And we also see that Bhaskar was the one who ratted out the bank to the inspection firm. And so the chairman says the Bhaskar got them into this mess, now he's going to get them out of it. And so Bhaskar feels he has no other choice but to sign the check for 100 crore. He tells the chairman well played, and he leaves the bank in relatively high spirits.
Yeah.
The chairman assures the general manager that Bhaskar won't snitch on them. He did this all for his family, and he's just a common middle-class Indian man. And this is, you know, he got what he wanted, and now he's done.
I loved that whole, like, monologue.
Yep.
Because I was just like, okay, like, yeah, I guess this guy's right. Like, yeah. I guess I could see that being why Bhaskar is so happy. But now, knowing what I know, I'm just like, I just love that it's like, he clearly still thinks Bhaskar is, like, beneath him.
Yes.
And
yes.
Like, oh, we just outsmarted him, and so he knows he should just kind of stick to what he does best. So good.
I know. I love that too. There was a part of me that was like, is this the end of the movie? Like, I didn't think this is how it was going to end.
Yeah. But he gets his comeuppance.
He does. There's plenty more movie left. So Suraj shows up at the bank to cash this check. And Bhaskar's account has already been emptied. In fact, it was emptied 10 days ago and closed. Now, again, there was a reason that they still saw the money in his account. I didn't write down what it was. It's fine.
Yeah, there was something.
He tricked him.
It's like the books didn't get updated until the end of the month.
Yeah, something like that. A few weeks earlier, he and his dad hatched this plan. They each cashed in on a few favors and got an investor's green card for Bhaskar and his family so they can head to America. The real inspectors arrive at the bank and take the chairman and general manager into custody. And Bhaskar, we see, knew from the start, from when he was looking at Harsh's accounts, that the chairman and general manager were in on this whole scheme, that he was meant to be a scapegoat, and he turned them in to keep any of the accusations off of himself.
Mm-hmm.
By the time they tried to coerce him, he already had this plan in motion, so it meant nothing. A few months later in quote-unquote Boston, maybe one or two too many palm trees to be Boston, but who am I to judge?
It really bothered me, honestly.
I mean, like, you live near Boston.
I was just like, y'all, couldn't you have gone back in with CGI and just made the vegetation look a little...
Or said it was Florida. They went to Miami.
Yeah. but no.
No.
Also, this is, like, Boston in, like, March.
Right, yeah. He's, like, April. Wearing, like, a heavy wool pea coat, and there's, like, palm trees. And I'm just like, what are we doing? Anyway, it's a few months later. We see a bearded Bhaskar leave work at the Bhaskar International Hotel. He arrives at his mansion in a Rolls Royce, passing multiple other fancy cars in his driveway as he goes. He gives Sumati a credit card with no limit. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
He turns to the camera.
How rich do you have to be
to have for there no to be limit no limit? Card.
Like, no limit?
No, none? The sky's the limit.
That's absurd.
I don't know.
I'll never be that rich.
No, you gotta have a lot of stuff to back up your wealth. But so Bhaskar turns to the camera and tells us that Sumati always knew he did something wrong, but she never dared to find out what. He says history only remembers how you finish, so if he ended on a win, he'd be remembered as a winner. He then asks us, how will you remember me? And the credits roll. And that's it. That's the movie.
It was good.
Yeah, it was good. I had a couple of end of movie thoughts to share.
Okay, yeah, what are your thoughts?
So first, I think the movie's pretty perfect, and I don't know how they could have necessarily incorporated this smoothly, but, like, I wanted to know more what the family dynamic is now, because it felt to me like there was maybe still a bit of coldness between Bhaskar and Sumati at the end.
Yeah.
But
then he also doesn't really address that in any way to be like, oh, I learned that in my pursuit of riches, I hurt my relationship with my wife. Like, there was never really that reckoning. Yeah.
And I like that that is where they end it, in with there being that maybe there's still a little bit of tension, because it's this idea that, like, you can never really go back. Like, once you've done this, you're never going to be the same person again. I think that there could have been some satisfaction in that, like, we can never go back, if they had maybe just shown us a teensy bit more of what their relationship looks like kind of after the fact.
Yeah.
But again, I
agree with that.
That's not really even a criticism. It's just something that I think could have been there.
Yeah. I did when I first finished it, I was like, I feel like something's missing. Just mm-hmm. a tiny something. Just a really tiny little something.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't really know what it is. And then when I thought about it more, I don't know if this is still fully correct in, as far as like, what am I looking for that I feel like I didn't get? But I think I wanted there to be some sort of takeaway for the audience beyond being entertained.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I don't really know why I wanted, like, the movies don't have to do that. You don't have to, like, impart a lesson on your audience in every film. Like, some movies do, but right. others are just there for entertainment. But I think because of the fourth wall break and because he's talking directly to us, I kind of feel like you're going to give us some words of wisdom yeah. or something. And then I didn't really feel like we got that.
Right.
Which is fine.
Yeah. I see what you mean. It's kind of like what you were saying before with like wanting this team to create a movie that does have more of like a message to it. Like,
yeah.
Movies that are just meant to be entertaining, that you're not necessarily sort of supposed to derive anything from, usually aren't this good.
Right.
At least
right.
in my opinion. So, like, I think yeah. the fact that this is such a well-crafted movie does make it feel like there would be some more kind of meat to it. Yeah. And I totally agree with you that, like, maybe there is that expectation and it's not necessarily a problem that they didn't give that to us. It's not necessarily a criticism that that's not there. But, like, I do feel like your expectation of it being there is valid.
Yeah. And, like, I think, you know, when it was clear we're ending the movie with him looking into the camera, being like, you know, winners and like how you remember. And like, I was like, you're gonna put something in here about how it costs something to win, though. Or like, you're gonna, yeah. there's gonna be something that kind of just ties up the themes,
mm-hmm.
which you can do again in, yeah, like one sentence.
And it could have been Tsumichi. Like, yeah. it could have been what right. I say, where, you know, it could have been like,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
I did this and the yeah. cost was my relationship with my wife. And not, you know, not necessarily that yeah. it's like they don't have a relationship anymore, but just that, like, it's
but
different.
It's not
now.
What it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So that was like my one thing.
Yeah.
And again, I still think it's phenomenal and I will absolutely watch it again.
Yeah.
It was just, I was like, ooh, I'm like 99.8% of the way there.
Yeah. That's how I feel too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, and it's that, like, you know, this is why this isn't like a perfect 10.
Yeah.
You know, with the ratings and things, it's like there are little things that aren't there, but there's a lot that is there. And I totally agree. It's something that I would happily recommend to people as, oh, yeah. you know, a great, like, Telugu movie, a great DQ movie, mm-hmm. a great yeah. crime money drama.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's so entertaining. Yeah. I was also just reminded, just thinking about DQ, when I first turned this movie on, because obviously it's dubbed, like, it has options of dubbing in a lot of different languages.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that I saw it checked off, like, the original Telugu with subtitles. And so I started it, and it's been a while since I've seen a DQ film. So, like, I couldn't exactly remember his voice. And I wasn't fully paying attention to what language was being spoken. And then it showed his mouth, obviously, and the words didn't align with it. And I was like, no, I'm not doing Hindi dubbed. And so I switched over to the Telugu, and the voice just dropped, like, four octaves lower. And I was like, ah, yes, there's DQ. Yeah. Yep.
Well, I wouldn't have been surprised if he had dubbed it himself, because he has done
well,
that
before. Well, that's what's right. And that's what surprised me that he didn't, unless he speaks in Hindi like, in a higher voice than
higher.
He speaks in Telugu. Yeah.
Any of the Hindi things I've seen him in, that hasn't been the case. But
exactly.
Okay, I want to say two really quick things. One, I also thought it was interesting how the movie starts with, like, a disclaimer of, like, we know that most people would be speaking Hindi, but we're making yeah. this movie for a Telugu audience.
There's
love it. Just something very powerful about that, and I appreciate that yes. a lot. And I don't remember what the second thing was. I'm ready to hear about your research, because I'm now, you've okay. teased it, and I'm excited to hear about it.
Yes. So first of all, I just wanted to say that Lucky Bhaskar has an 8 out of 10 on IMDb, mm-hmm. which is like really high.
It is, yeah.
Which I think is well deserved. But it is also DQ's highest grossing film to date.
That's awesome.
Grossing between 107 to 111 crore at the box office.
That's amazing.
Right? That makes me really happy.
That makes me happy too.
Because it also is just such a testament then to, like, who he is and how he acts. Like, it's his charm.
Yeah.
Because this isn't necessarily a glitzy, glammy movie.
No, it's just, it's a great movie, and a lot of that is riding on his very excellent performance.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, that's great.
That's awesome. Congrats.
Yeah. But yeah, so as I was like, oh gosh, what do I research? And, you know, I always start by just being like, let me just start to look at reviews.
Yep.
But I didn't even get that far before I realized that the 1992 Indian stock market scam is real.
Amazing. It happened. Okay.
Yeah. So Bhaskar's character is fictional, but the times in which he's living were very real.
Okay.
And the scam that was going on between the banks and, like, the stock market, very real. So the scam was carried out by a stockbroker named Harshad Mehta.
Mm, very similar.
Yes. And other bankers and politicians as they manipulated the market of the Bombay Stock Exchange. It was the biggest money market scam ever committed in India, amounting to approximately 5,000 crore.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It ended up, I don't know why they switched to USD for this one instance, because in the future it's like they give you crore and USD, but it ended up defrauding investors of over 15 million USD.
Whoa.
Yes. The scope of the scam was so large that the net value of the stocks was higher than the combined health and education budget of India.
Whoa. Oh, boy.
Like, this is, I can't even imagine how they bounced back. Like, this happened 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, that was not that long ago. How did they bounce back?
It's also just, like, putting it in those terms is so much, like, think of how much they could have done with that money.
Oh, my God, that too. Yeah, but, you know. At the time the scam was exposed, Mantek Singh Ahluwalia, Secretary of Economic Affairs at the Ministry of Finance, revealed in an interview that many top bank officials were involved.
Mm.
And there were also some top politicians. There were allegations of a bribe that was paid to, like, the prime minister.
Mm.
I couldn't find more information on that, so we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
But interesting. And as shown in the film, the heart of the scam was abusing market loopholes and artificially driving stock prices up to 40 times their original price.
Wow.
At the time, individual banks were expected to make a profit and keep a certain ratio of their assets in government fixed interest bonds. Under the guise of this requirement, Mehta went to individual banks and asked them to transfer money into his personal account in return for higher rates of interest. He told them he would then buy securities for them from other banks, since banks had to go through a broker to buy those securities.
Okay.
In this way, Mehta siphoned off 1,000 crore from the banking system to purchase stocks.
Wow.
He then drove the stock prices up and sold his stocks at the exact right time, then passed on part of his proceeds to the bank and kept the rest for himself. It's kind of brilliant.
I mean,
it's scummy.
I was literally just going to say, and I also think that that's something that this movie does really well, is it's like you watch people commit these, like, horrible crime, like this, like,
yeah,
humongous white collar crime. And you also can't help but feel a little bit like, man, I wish I was smart enough to do that.
Like, and like also unethical enough.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I wish that I was a bad enough person.
I
could want to do this without feeling any, like, negative feelings about it. And also that I was smart enough to pull it off.
And then it reminds you that, like, there's people all over the world doing things like this all the time.
Right.
Like, that's why we had the stock market crash
in
our country. Like,
It'd be great if people would stop doing this.
Yeah.
I also wish I had more money. Like, that's what.
Yes.
And I think that's the relatable thing about these kinds of stories.
Yeah. But I think then what's awful about it is that, like, whenever a stock market crashes, wherever it is, it's the common people that lose out.
Exactly.
Because everyone's getting rich off of their backs, and then the people who have their retirement invested suddenly don't have retirement.
Right. Like, those are the savings that get lost, and then it's the people who, like, are safe and who never really needed this who are the ones who are doing it, and they kind of end up fine. Even if they end up in jail, they're probably fine.
Which is all really terrible.
Yeah.
Also, an explanation of the bank receipt scam. So securities were not constantly moved back and forth. Instead, the borrower, i.e. seller of securities, gave the buyer of the securities a BR, or bank receipt,
okay,
which served as a receipt from the selling bank and promised that the buyer would receive the securities they'd paid for at the end of a certain term.
Okay.
Knowing this, Mehta formed relationships with banks that he could trust to issue fake BRs, i.e. BRs not backed by any government securities. Once the fake BRs were issued, they were passed on to other banks, and those banks in turn gave money to Mehta, assuming that they were lending against government securities, which they weren't, because scam. So that's why it became such a problem.
Yep. Okay.
The scam continued as long as the stock prices kept going up, but in April 1992, it became clear to some higher-ups who were not in on the scam that Mehta was a disproportionately large investor in government securities.
Yeah.
By that time, he was doing more than a third of the total securities business in India.
That is bonkers.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's like how to shake an infrastructure to its core.
Just
like,
become the dominant force and be corrupt.
Yes. And when the public realized that Mehta's investments were illegitimate and his stocks were likely worthless, it set off a selling frenzy.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Of Mehta's stocks. Yep. And this left the banks who had dealt with Mehta holding bank receipts that did not have any value because they'd been promised against non-existent securities. The banks alone were swindled for 4,000 crore, equivalent to $3.6 billion
wow.
in 2023, which was when these numbers were okay. crunched.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine if our banking system was like, oh, we've just misplaced $3.6 billion.
Yeah. Just casual. It's fine.
The combination of the selling frenzy and defrauded banks crashed the Indian stock market, causing prices to drop 40% immediately.
Wow.
Yeah. After everything came to light, Mehta was charged with 72 criminal offenses and more than 600 civil action suits were filed against him. He was banished from the stock market and ended up being arrested by the Central Bureau of Investigation in November 1992 for allegedly misappropriating more than 2.8 million shares from about 90 companies through forged share transfer forms.
Wow.
The total value of the shares misappropriation was 250 crore, equivalent to $230 million USD in 2023. Also, I'm like, there's so many piles of non-existent money. Like,
yeah, I know. It just makes this. Doesn't it also make you just think about how it's all fake, you know?
Like, yes. Yeah. They're all just numbers on a screen.
Right. None of it's like actually.
And we all have to buy into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's terrifying.
It is really terrifying. It's like, can't we just go back to like trading goods?
Yeah. You'd do well with that.
I would. Yeah. You're I'd be fine.
Yeah. Somehow, wink. Mehta was found not guilty in any of these cases.
What?
He was able to make a brief comeback as a stock market guru, giving tips on his own website as well as in a weekly newspaper column.
No!
But in September 1999, the Bombay High Court convicted and sentenced him to 5 years rigorous imprisonment and a fine of 25,000 rupees.
No.
Which is 290 USD.
No.
That's it.
Incorrect.
5 years and like $300.
No. I'm so mad.
For like literally ruining lives.
Like that's so much money that he, I don't even know what to, okay, yep. Great.
And like he literally just demolished the stock market system, the banking system.
It's like not even a slap on the wrist. Like if you have that much, if you've swindled that much money, $300 is like a sneeze.
Yeah. I mean, I could pay three. If I had, I'd be like, okay, yeah, here's $300. Yeah. Like I could do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to, but I've got that much. Like it wouldn't be a problem. Yeah.
Which is absurd.
Oh
and,
my
like,
God.
5 years. Anyway, after the scam, various bank officials were discovered to be corrupt and were arrested, leading to a complete breakdown of banking systems.
Yeah.
Yep. The government also realized that the fundamental problem with the financial structure of the stock markets was the lack of computerized systems.
Yeah.
The scam led to a completely reformed system of stock transactions, including new online security systems. This opened up the financial market to the entire nation rather than being confined to Bombay.
Ah.
So I guess, you know, that's good.
Yeah.
And then all banks were made custodians rather than principals in transactions. And they had a separate audit system monitored by the RBI, Reserve Bank of India. Mm. So they recovered, which is good.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that was so recent. That was like, yes, that was 33 years ago. It's not that long.
Yeah. No. And then just a little note on like the scam in pop culture. So there are multiple films and series inspired by this 1992 scam, including a 2006 Hindi language film called Gafla and a 2021 Hindi language film called The Big Bull, which happens to star Abhishek Bachchan as Harshad Mehta.
Oh.
So I'm a little like, interesting, because apparently The Big Bull is like a loose telling of his life.
Okay.
And includes the scam.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of interested in it. Just as, like, to learn more.
Yeah. Well, and I also, that kind of answers one of the things that I jotted down to talk about from this is, like, why wasn't this movie more about that? Like, why didn't they say, like, because I don't even think they said this is, like, based on true events. Like, no. It sort of seems like they create, in this world, in this India, that's this sort of fake, made-up instance of this happening. So I was thinking, like, why didn't they have it be, like, the actual guy, the actual historical events? But maybe the reasoning was because there had just been a movie pretty recently that had come out about that. So they're like, well, let's just, we'll tell the same story, but without the actual historical facts.
Yeah. And I also do like that they focus on the more, like, middle class man and what, like, a potential story that could have happened to one of the smaller guys.
Right.
Because, yeah, I feel like there's only two stories to tell with that. Mm-hmm. And one of them is really, really, really sad.
Yep.
And the other one is this.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and I'm glad that they chose this one. I also think it's interesting. Yeah. I was thinking this before, how in the movie Harsha, they never show his face. They show him from the...
Nope.
And so I was like, oh, I bet when they do show him, it's going to be like a big like cameo from some famous Telugu actor. I was completely wrong about that. They just never showed his face. And I think that choice, it kind of has like, there's almost like a gravitas to it that they were like...
Yeah.
Like, shh, it's this guy who was real, but we're not telling you that, you know, we're not being explicit, but it's pretty obvious that's what we're basing this on.
Yeah. And it's not about him.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
That's also a good point. Yeah. It's about a lucky Bhaskar.
The lucky Bhaskar. So that's that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing that research. I had absolutely no idea.
Me neither.
And I do, like, I think it adds a really interesting context to this movie.
Mm-hmm. It also weirdly, like I feel bad for, like, the normal people who were impacted by that.
Yeah.
But just goes to show that, like, these systems do bounce back.
Yeah.
Which, in a way, is a little, like, makes me slightly optimistic. I mean, this movie both made me more pessimistic and more optimistic.
Yeah.
It's, like, more pessimistic in that I'm like, God, there really are crooks everywhere. And, like... Mm-hmm. Wherever there's money to be made, people are gonna cut corners to do it. But I don't know, you know, this whole crash happened in 92 and all the banks failed and the stock market failed and
I'd be curious.
Those systems are back up and running in India.
Yeah, I would be curious to know, like, what the, like, long-term ramifications were.
Yeah.
Like, I would assume that looking at the common man in India, and I use the man and I use that as a gender neutral term, like, probably didn't get to have quite the comeuppance that Bhaskar gets to have. So, like, what have been the lasting, like, effects on just, you know, the average people or the impoverished people in India?
Yeah, I would want to know that too, because I did see a few facts and figures about, like, specific companies. Mm-hmm. That I kind of was like, I'm not looking into that. But, I mean, it ruined several companies, too, because it was like their stock prices artificially went up. And then their stock value crashed. Like, none of it's real.
None of it's real. I know. Yeah. It's you'd never want to peek too far behind that curtain. But then it's also like that curtain is designed to keep us from peeking behind it because the ones behind it are the ones who are benefiting from all of it. So.
Right.
Yeah.
That's anyway.
Like Wizard of Oz stuff up in here. Well, good stuff. Great research. Great movie.
Really fantastic movie. I'm excited to share it with people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bollywood news.
Yeah. I didn't know if that was you, like, about to launch into something or if...
No.
Okay. I feel like we should, maybe we should rename the segment Bollywood, because it's not so much news as much as I just want to make sure you saw the same things I saw on Instagram since the last time we were
okay, I definitely didn't, because I haven't been on Instagram in forever, but what would we call it if it's not Bollywood news?
Well, you know, when we started off...
Bollywood bits.
Bollywood beat.
Ooh.
You used to call it Bollywood Star Watch, which is also, I think, yes, appropriate.
Okay, we could do, yeah, Bollywood Star Watch. That
makes
sense.
I think we can, yeah. Like,
especially because we're 2 weeks old,
yeah,
at this point.
But here's my Bollywood stuff.
Okay, yeah, Bollywood stuff.
It's just one thing. And I, so it was just recently the 25th anniversary of the release of Kahona Pyar Hai, which means we all get to celebrate 25 years of Hrithik. Yay. He shared on Instagram, like, a bunch of notes that he took while they were filming. So it's just, like, a notebook of, like, his sort of, like, scrawled, some in English, some in Hindi, notes that, like, throughout that aww process. And it was, like, a, you know, a carousel of, like, 7 or 8 photos that he took of this notebook. Uh-huh. And I read some of it. His handwriting was a little hard to read, which is adorable. But, like, what I could read of the English, it was a lot of just, like, don't F this up, but, like, you know, the actual swear word. And, like, you're only going to get one shot at this, and a lot of, like, that kind of stuff. And I thought that was great.
Yeah, it's a sweet insight into his mind.
Yeah,
25 years ago.
And I love that he held on to it. And he was like, you know, yeah, this is something I want to look at. This is going to mean something to me someday.
I just feel like Hrithik is a sweet, potentially kind of introverted.
Yeah.
Like, artistic soul.
Yep.
Trapped in, like, a super hot guy's body.
Yes, he absolutely is. And I think it's interesting, like, you hear that a lot of actors, like, a lot of actors identify as being introverted and
yeah
are, like, very shy and reserved as actual people. And I just think Hrithik's one of them. And I think you do see, like, yeah, he's got that, like, artist's soul. He's like, right, Adi, you know, like Adi Chopra, where yeah it's like, I'm not here for the limelight. I'm here because I love to do this and I'm good at it.
Yeah, that's really it. Sweet. I'll have to take a look at that.
Yeah, it was yeah really, really interesting.
I have just a PSA. By the time this comes out, the Roshan's miniseries is coming out on January 17th, which this will be released after that yeah date, obviously. But so I think by the time this comes out, we'll have like 2 episodes, because I think it might be released weekly.
Mm. Okay.
I'm not sure. I actually had to Google, like, how many episodes is this miniseries going to be? And apparently it's 4.
Okay.
We'll have to see if it all comes out at the same time or if it's week by week. But I'm excited.
I'm excited to watch that too. And I also really want to watch Angry Young Men, which is the one about
yes
Javed Akhtar and his writing partner. So, yeah, we're going to have to do
some... Is that one already out?
That's already out, yeah. So we'll do some documentary watching and discussing.
So that was Bollywood news. Pluggables. Follow us at 2WhiteGirlsTalkBollywood on Instagram. I'm confident this time. Like, it's going to be up and running by, yeah, next week.
I believe in you.
Yeah. That is happening. We're going to get back on that horse, back on that train. Also, consider subscribing to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on, and you could even consider leaving a rating or review,
yeah,
which would be wonderful. But regardless of what you choose to do or not do, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, and thank you for joining us on our YouTube and Spotify Bollywood Bangers playlists, if you do that. It's where we keep the songs that we listen to and love from the movies that we watch, and... You can find those playlists linked in our episode descriptions as well as in our Instagram posts.
Mm-hmm. Which will happen again.
Yay!
So, next week,
mm-hmm,
we will be watching... Well, I guess next week. Next episode. Still getting used to that.
Yeah.
We will be watching Alia Bhatt's 2024 film Jigra.
Yeah, which I know that we have heard from a listener that they really enjoyed. Yes. And I'm just glad that we have access to this movie. I had seen some things on Aliabot's Instagram about it and didn't know if it was one that would be available to us. So I was excited to see it pop up on Netflix recently.
Me too. She is so huge.
Yeah.
She's doing so many things. She has already proven that she's very versatile as like an actor, but I'm excited to see her in this like fully, I don't even know. It just seems a little dark.
It does seem dark.
Yeah. Like in a good way. Like I'm excited to see her be edgy and cutthroat and
I know absolutely nothing about this movie, so I think if that's
me neither,
if that's the vibe, I'm here for it. I'm here for whatever the vibe ends up being. The plot on IMDb is, when Ankur is wrongfully imprisoned and sentenced to death in a foreign country, his steely sister Satya is driven by a lethal resolve to break him free. So edgy, I think, is a good think you used the right word there.
Yeah, I mean, there's like a lot of like red and fading into dark and like intense on the Netflix like trailers.
Yeah,
and there's materials.
Like the movie poster here on IMDb is her like covered in dirt wearing a bulletproof vest, and there's fire behind her. She's got like seven different weapons.
Yeah,
it's like a game of Clue in her hands.
That's fun. But Jigra is available to watch on Netflix. And the Netflix synopsis is, when her younger brother gets framed and sentenced to death on foreign soil, a cold-blooded Satya teams up with a gangster and an ex-cop to free him.
Cool. Team up.
So...
Oh my god, Sikandar Kerr is in this.
Do I know who that is?
He's the guy... He was in Honey Bunny. He's the guy with the mustache. He was in, he was also in Zoya Factor. He was Zoya's brother.
Oh, okay, I'll recognize him.
This man. I don't know why I'm not just.
Oh, yes, I know that guy.
Yeah. Great. I like him. So great.
Awesome. So cool. It's going to be a different vibe than Lucky Bhaskar, I suspect, but I'm excited for it.
But it's still good. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So until next time, remember, Bollywood and also Tollywood don't need us.
They do not.
But we need all of them.
We do. We always do. And we also need people to not, like, crash the stock market, but...
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Unless they're DQ, you know?
If you're that adorable, I guess we can forgive you.
Yeah. Don't get any ideas, though.